Our featured guest today, Professor Emeritus at Princeton University, Dr. Burton Malkiel, author of A Random Walk Down Wall Street. Well, it's a pleasure to have Professor Burton Malkiel on the show, the Professor of Economics Emeritus and Senior Economist at Princeton University, author of A Random Walk Down Wall Street, a must-read for every investor. Welcome back, Professor.
Thank you very much.
Talk today about predictions and forecasts. You have gone on record with very interesting stance on this, and there are so many folks out there, gurus and analysts, with their opinions on the markets. Could you tell us more?
One of the things I think we know is that no one, and I really mean no one, can predict what's going to happen to the market over the next day, the next week, the next few months, the next year. I have been in this business for over 50 years. I have never known anyone who could time the market. Indeed, I've never known anyone who knows anyone who could time the market. So I think one of the lessons that we really should keep in mind is no one knows where the market's going to go. And it's even worse than that, because when we try to do it, we're much more likely to get it wrong than right. Our emotions get a hold of us, and we tend then to buy when everyone is optimistic and sell when everyone is pessimistic. When you look at the money that's flowed into equity mutual funds, more money went in at the height of the internet bubble in early 2000 than ever before. And then when did it go out? It went in at the top. When did it go out? In the third quarter of 2008, at the kind of height of the financial crisis, we basically found that people took their money out. So it was exactly the time. Don't try to time the market. You can't do it. Nobody can do it. Professionals can't do it. The government can't do it. And when you try to do it, you're more likely to get it wrong than right.
It really does, though, have a silver lining. You can prepare. Just because we don't know the future doesn't mean we can't benefit from the fact that we know virtually nothing about tomorrow, let alone next year. And you give us the key to a very successful formula.
There are two things you can do in the face of not being able to predict. One is you can just put money in period after period, as you do with a 401k plan at work. You will sometimes buy at the high, but you'll also sometimes buy at the low. And by so-called dollar cost averaging, what you find is that you get actually an average cost for your shares that's below the average of the prices at which you buy. And the reason for that is that when the market is low, you tend to buy more shares than when the market is high, and therefore your average cost tends to be lower than the average of the prices, because you're buying more shares when the price is low. And the way this works is, take a decade, which we think was a terrible decade for the stock market, the first decade of the 2000s, when the market actually ended up just about the same place where it started. And some people say you couldn't make a nickel out of the stock market in the first decade of the 2000s. Well, if you dollar cost averaged, that is to say, you just every couple of weeks or every paycheck or every quarter, you put the same amount in, you actually had a pretty good return, even in that lost decade. Why? Because when the market was low, as it was in 2002 and 2003 and 2007, 2008, you were buying more shares. And even though the market as a whole ended up exactly where it was at the beginning, you could make money by that technique. So, in other words, use not being able to predict the market to work in your favor. Dollar cost averaging is the way to go. So I recommend to people, look, it's very important that you save for your retirement. You don't know today if the market's too high or too low, but start this regular savings plan, and over the long pull, it's been known to work and to work well.
May not be the sexy advice that people are looking for, but the statistics certainly support this as the best way to go. And you also have talked about stock valuations. You're on the show about 6 months ago, and you aptly pointed out the CAPE index, price to earnings metric, pointing to overvaluation, and we just haven't seen much forward progress since then. Are you sticking with your analysis?
What has happened is, I think all assets are very highly priced today. And they're highly priced today because the government is setting the base rate, which is the rate at which perfectly safe Treasury securities sell, at a very, very low rate. They have basically set the short-term rate at zero, and the 10-year Treasury sells for a yield that's just over 2%. That has remained. That suggests that returns are going to be somewhat lower in the future. And what that means is, if you're saving for retirement, it's extremely important that you put money aside. You may even have to put more money aside to guarantee that you're going to be able to live with a comfortable retirement. So yes, market prices are high. Valuations are above average. Yields or returns are probably below average. That's the situation that we all have to live with.
You've mentioned indexing, and you're obviously a big fan of, and obviously keeping expenses low, especially when yields are not as high as they have been in the past, and or returns for that matter. I wonder if you could give us an idea, this other topic you've brought up in the past, and that's target date funds, particularly with for folks who have 401ks. There's adjustment there between stock and bond exposure. Can you tell us more?
When you're young, when you're in your 20s, 30s, 40s even, you've got lots of time to ride out the ups and downs of the stock market, and you've got a lifetime of employment and therefore earnings ahead of you, and you can afford to take the risk of being very heavily, indeed even largely, invested in common stocks. But when you're in your late 60s or 70s, when you may be retired, when you don't have the earnings from employment to tide you over, if there's a reversal in the stock market, as there often is, stock markets fluctuate, they go up and down, at that point, you probably need a safer portfolio and one that produces some amount of income that you're going to live on. So what the idea is that when you are older and in retirement, you want a somewhat safer portfolio. You want one that's somewhat less exposed to equities, one that is a more income-generating portfolio. And that is the kind of life cycle theory of investing that I think everybody should keep in mind. Now, what a life cycle fund does, what a target date fund does, is it will automatically move you over time as you age into this somewhat safer income-producing portfolio. It's a kind of set-it-and-forget-it type of portfolio. And for those who would like the simpler solution, it's a very serviceable one.
for our listeners who perhaps have a favorite guru or analyst or program that they watch for investment advice and try to help people really sink their teeth into this idea that you've laid out so eloquently here regarding the frivolousness of trying to command the tides?
I have been an advocate of so-called indexing. That is to say, to put your money in a portfolio that simply buys and holds all the stocks in the market. I've been in favor of this in my book, A Random Walk Down Wall Street, the first edition, even before index funds existed. And the evidence has just been extraordinary. One of the reasons that I do new editions and why the book's in its 11th edition now is that the instruments that are available today are totally different from what they were when I first wrote the book. There were no index funds. Then there were index funds. Now there are so-called exchange-traded funds that allow you to buy index funds that trade on the New York Stock Exchange. So the evidence that has been accumulating is just extraordinary, that this is not mediocre investing. This is not average investing. This is above average investing, because when you try to use one of the gurus or one of the fine portfolio managers that's going to knock the socks off the market, that's going to outperform, what you find is that they charge you at least 1 percentage point a year, sometimes 2 percentage points a year. An indexed ETF you can buy at essentially zero expense. 1/20 of 1% is the typical expense ratio of these funds. And when you look at the evidence, it's not average performance. It generally beats 80 to 90% of the active managers. In fact, that was the case last year. Over 80% of active managers were beaten by this low-cost index fund approach. I believe even more strongly than I did 40 years ago when I first wrote the book that this ought to be the core of every portfolio, a low-cost total stock market index fund. I believed it 40 years ago. I believe it even more now. And as the evidence accumulates, there's just no question in my mind that this kind of fund ought to be the core of your portfolio.
Very good. Asset classes. My guess is as you really start to balance a portfolio, give it a nice solid beta, you would also like to add some diversification among those asset classes, because there are times when even stocks and bonds aren't negatively correlated. In order to truly have a diversified portfolio, international exposure, commodities, things of that nature. Any thoughts there?
Absolutely. I think that's one of the things that one ought very much to do. Maybe start off with a U.S. portfolio, but remember the United States is only something like a quarter to a third of the world's economic activity. One ought to be diversified internationally, including diversified into the rapidly growing emerging economies of the world. One ought to have more asset classes than simply stocks and bonds. One asset class that I favor should be in each portfolio is some real estate investments, which are accessible through real estate investment trusts. And here, I believe in indexing, just as I do with regular common stocks. There are index funds of real estate investment trusts that diversify among commercial buildings, retail space, and so forth. So that's an asset class that ought to be in a portfolio. Broad diversification reduces risk, extremely important for investors as their portfolio grows.
Well, A Random Walk Down Wall Street. What a must read. This is a must read for everyone. I'll wager that it's the most supplemented or the most read text in virtually every business class across America. Even though it's not classified as a textbook, most professors would add that on to any financial course. It's just a pleasure to have you here today. Can you tell us if you are planning another edition? Will you be adding any more information?
Well, the 11th edition was published in January of this year, and I usually do one every 3 or 4 years. But right now, the current 11th edition with the yellow cover has the most recent and up-to-date information available.
Very good. We're going to put the text on our website. And we can't thank you enough, sir, for helping get people back on track with their portfolios. Professor Burton Malkiel, thanks so much.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Here is your mining quiz for the day, compliments of GoldSeek. Which company has the largest undeveloped gold reserve in North America? Seabridge Gold. Now, which company has the largest undeveloped copper reserve in North America? Seabridge Gold again. Seabridge has more gold reserves than Kinross, Yamana, and Agnico Eagle. Last year alone, Seabridge added 515 million tons of new inferred resources containing nearly 6 million ounces of gold and more than 6 billion pounds of copper at their giant KSM project in British Columbia, Canada. Now they are drilling at KSM again with multiple rigs in a 25,000-meter program. Find out more by visiting www.seabridgegold.net. Traded on the NYSE, symbol SA, and the TSX, symbol SEA.
GoldSeek employees may or may not own shares. Nothing contained herein should be construed as investment advice.